Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
In by Kulusevski.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Welcome back, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and a man who thought the first half against Wolves was pretty good, actually. It's Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
That's me.
I need to get on to asking you why you thought that was so good, but before we do that, simply, Bardi, Alex C. says, is the system dead?
Well, I don't know, when Nathan and I were in charge of this podcast, we beat Chelsea, then your reign of terror comes back and we lose to Wolves, we lose to
and Forest. Sheffield United.
Sheffield United, yeah. Nathan and I had it all under control and then you come back and then you mess it all
it's
up.
It's same that
you,
this,
you did have it all under control.
Yeah, that Conte wasn't back for the Sheffield Wolves game, so we can't get the analogy going of me and Vardy being Stellini and Mason.
Yeah, which one's which? I mean, the obvious thing is to go Vardy Stellini because he's Italian, but I'm not sure that's the case. I think he's definitely more Ryan Mason.
I do have a point on this, but I don't know whether it's now's the time just to get straight into it or we
do it.
Hiss us.
No, get stuck in.
I've got a funny feeling, right? So under Stellini, we've been okay. We've won some games and we've continued to progress and we've got some points and it's been good. But then we've arrived at a certain point now where, like, Conte has to come. You have to come back. Either you're dying and that's it. We terminate your contract because you can no longer do your job, or you fuck off. You can't be this kind of phantom that's there taking the praise and they're not taking the blame or taking the blame, whatever. He either comes back now and sorts this out because we're approaching a proper fucking crisis, or he fucks off. This can't continue to happen. We can't continue to progress through these games with him on a fucking WhatsApp group, Ryan Mason and Stellini going through the motions, because I do think there are situations in game where Antonio Conte, who's a £15 million manager, could alter the game by just by simply being there and being able to instruct things and make things happen. So we've arrived now where that's it. Either you come back and you fix it or you're finished. That's it. I'm not saying it out or fire him, but something has to give him. Either I've got a horrible feeling that something really bad is going on. But yeah.
What do you mean by that?
I don't know, man. What if he's really fucking sick?
You think he's really unwell?
I think he genuinely could be really unwell because this has gone on a long time now.
Well, he's due back for the Milan game. I don't know. I feel like he has been off for the appropriate amount of time that someone would need to have after having their gallbladder removed, whereas before he tried to clearly rush back and that was terrible for him.
Yeah.
I think, in answer to your question, he needs to fuck off. Do you think he needs to go? Like, I don't think these performance levels are acceptable in any way. I think the fact that we're fourth is testament to the teams around us doing terribly and not us being the fourth best team in the country. At the moment, I would say we look way more on course to finishing seventh or eighth than we do fourth, like the trajectory of our season. And the teams behind us starting to pick up and, you know, Liverpool drastically improved. Chelsea, I suspect, will probably end up finishing above us at this rate. Brentford and Brighton look a threat to us, a real threat to us. Newcastle, obviously, as well. We are not a team that's going to finish fourth if we carry on with this trajectory. It's really, really, really not good. And to be honest, I find it unfathomable that Daniel Levy hasn't done something about it. And I do wonder whether it's like a sympathy thing. I wonder if he like feels he can't fire Conte right now because the poor guy has been through so much this year. Like, he has had personal trauma after personal trauma, followed by severe illness. And maybe Levy's doing the kind of humane thing of sticking by him while he gets through that. When actually, were it not for that, he'd have been gone.
Huh. Well, okay. First of all, I want to offer solidarity with anyone on long-term sick leave and shut down Vardy's extremely anti-sick leave position. In terms of Conte specifically, in terms of like him coming back and fixing things, it's like things have been marginally better. It doesn't feel like it, right? Things have been marginally better. They were at first, and we had a half against Wolves. So like he's been here.
Did we? Well, we'll come back to that.
He's been here for a run of form this bad and been here to try to fix it and not fixed it. And he's clearly heavily involved in our in-game management. You know, Stalin's been pretty upfront about that. So I don't think we're...
How's he watching, by the way? Because the Premier League doesn't stream games. So I guess he's in Italy, so they probably get every game.
Yeah, they get every game. In
Brilliant.
Yeah. maybe he gets the club feed as well, and he's got tactical cam, eh? So yeah, I don't know if I'm not like excited to have him back, I guess is what I'm getting to. I don't think it's going to do much for us. I think that the season we're just like, he doesn't seem particularly keen to stick around. What the reporting suggests, we're not particularly desperate to keep hold of him. So we're just sort of walking the season out. It's a zombie season. And I find myself not caring that much game to game now, even though top four is obviously tight. But yeah, I'm not in desperate need to rush a, 53-year-old man back early from his surgery in the hope that he'll turn things around, because I just don't think he will.
Obviously, I would like to also offer my sympathies to Antonio's and his family that he's obviously sick. But I'm just saying, if he's on permanent sick leave, then we need to know that he's on permanent sick leave. That's it. There has to be a replacement lined up. There has to be some kind of fail-safe, not Stellini and Ryan Mason. I honestly do think he can fix it. Is he able to? I don't know. I'm not sure.
Is the fix going to be playing Lucas Moura more?
Well, I don't know. We're getting to that, but I don't know. That's just a madness. I'm not sure on that. But there's a few things here. So I've been quite vocal for Antonio Conte from the start. And I remain confident that Antonio Conte is a good manager. Whatever happens at Spurs, say he goes to Newcastle and they give him £200 million, £300 million, he wins the Premier League. And I'm fully confident that that's what would happen. I don't think he's a dinosaur. I don't think his tactics are outdated. I mean, he won Serie A, which is a really tactical league, a couple of seasons ago. And he's continued to win competitions and he's done decent thing at Spurs. So I don't think he's outdated. I don't think he's a dinosaur. He'll come back and he'll fuck all over us because that's what he does. That's what he does to teams. So I do think, but I think in all of this, I've been walking the dog today thinking about where am I going to stand on this? Am I going to come down off a hill and just say Conte out? No, I'm not going to do that. But I do think Tottenham Hotspur need to have a long, hard look at themselves and figure out what they're doing, what their plans are. And then before they make their next appointment, have a real think about it and just don't be idiots. Think about what suits the team. Think about what suits the players. Think about which players you're going to buy, because our Discord is going, oh, just buy a goalkeeper, buy a centre-back, buy a number 10. If we'd just done that for Conte, we would have won the league. So that's not going to happen. But we have to really be a smart club now. I think... Has Daniel Levy got another appointment in him? I don't know, probably, because who's going to fire him? But the club just need to be smarter right now.
Yeah, I agree with everything you say about Conte. I haven't lost faith in his capability as a manager, and I completely recognise everything he achieved in Serie A. In fact, something else you said that I agree with, and this isn't to try to dig you out. I've already done that once this episode, right? I remember when we appointed Conte, you said, we don't need a project manager. We don't need someone who's going to come in and take 5 years to do what Conte will do in two. I remember that quote specifically because it really won me round. I really bought in at that point. But I think that we were wrong. I think that we've needed something long-term and steadier, and someone's going to bring two younger technical players and build us up and recognise the state that we're in, and develop our squad, develop younger players over time and sort of gradually build towards something. And I think that we've misstepped in not recognising that.
I mean, I totally agree with you. That sounds really nice in principle. And I think Conte isn't a project manager. Maybe we didn't need that, but I do think we needed to have given Conte key players. I don't like with Skip came through under Conte. He had a great start under Conte, and then he got injured, and he's come back strong under Conte. Jed Spence, I agree, was probably mishandled, and that wasn't handled nicely. But we've still got Emerson and Porro now in those other positions. I think he gave loads of opportunities to Sessegnon. Sars come through. And elsewhere, I don't know, Brian Hill could have got more minutes. But other than that, which other youth players should he have played, or could we have?
Well, I'm saying the players that we've bought, we should have aimed younger. So for example, under obviously Paratici is director of football, but under Conte's guidelines, we brought in Perisic and Forster and Bissouma and Richarlison. Obviously, those aren't all old players, but those are peak or post-peak players. Obviously, Perisic has aged a decade this season, as has Højbjerg. Porro is a younger player. Obviously, brought in Kulusevski, brought in Bentancur, brought in Longley on a loan, brought in Danjuma on a loan. So, like, that's the extent to which we have backed Conte, and I can poke holes in that. I can say we should have done this better, or we could have gone for this player, or if there was more to spend, we could have gone here. But I don't think I don't think we failed to give him what he's asked for, and I think that he's failed to deliver with what he had. Like, consider where we were last season, the amount of money we've invested, the what at least from to the outside seems like the control over exactly where we spent that money, the input over where we spent that money. He's got the type of players he wants. He's got the level of players that is sort of the compromise between the very best in the world and the top end of our budget. And we've regressed dramatically this season.
Yeah, I agree that he should have done better. It's got to sound like I'm defending him, but I do think we haven't had the Romero, Bentancur, Kulusevski, Kane.
Sure.
I don't think those... We haven't had that. We've lost the spine of that team. And our issues with the club, our issues with the team, have been those moments where we've deviated from the kind of regulars, like Sheffield United, playing Sanchez, playing Lucas. But then, of course, they're his decisions. They were his decisions to make. But yeah. I think we keep losing Romero through injury, so I think resting him was probably a wise move.
I don't agree with that last point. I think it hasn't just been that there's like the odd blip game where we rest players and suddenly it comes unstuck. I think largely this whole season has been bad. There's been a couple of good games within it, but largely the trajectory has been downwards. Also, I completely agree with you, Bardi, that Conte is not a dinosaur. Like, his ideas aren't outdated. He's got some really good ideas, and that last season showed that completely. But I do think he has some dinosaur tendencies, like his lack of rotation, which are just incompatible with the season we've had, and also probably incompatible with our club. Like, you know, his refusal to play young players until he really has to is in complete antithesis to what Daniel Levy wants from a Spurs coach. And, you know, obviously that comes down to club strategy, and, you know, Levy and Paratici are the ones at fault there rather than Conte. They got him, they knew what to expect, but Conte hasn't helped himself. You know, it's not a good look for him when Sarr and Skip and Hill come into the team and look really capable and look really able to add something to the squad, when he's basically excluded them for the whole time and just played the same players over and over and over. You know, Emerson Royale when he was really struggling, Højbjerg doesn't look the same player when he's forced to play every game. You know, when he has a break, he comes back and looks really good. Then he plays every game and looks really rusty and tired and unfit, like he was at the end of the Wolves game. I think these are things that Conte can do better. And I really feel like, especially with what Nathan said, the investment he's had, the specific investment he had on Conte-type players. Even despite that, I think he's massively underperformed where he should. And people will say, look, we're still in the Champions League. We're still in fourth place in the league. You can keep saying that while it's true now. It's not going to be the case in 2 weeks, in 3 weeks, in 4 weeks. That I tell you now, that is not going to be the case. We're going to be out of the Champions League and we're going to be way down the league. And it's Paratici and Levy's job to see that coming and do something about it. And unfortunately, in the way the football works now, doing something about it means getting rid of the manager. If this was someone who's kind of building patterns of play from the ground up and was establishing a particular style over a long period of time, you'd accept some rough results like we did with Pochettino at the start, because you can see it's a foundation for building something. And maybe Chelsea are going through the O'Graham Potter and they need to be patient. But with a manager like Conte, who has a plug-and-play system, it, in theory, it should be at its absolute optimal by this point. You can't wait, I don't think.
Or it peaked in the first season, as it often happens with Conte. Yeah. And there's rarely a point going into the second season with them.
And don't get me wrong, it really did peak. We looked so good at the end of last season. I was really happy 100%. With how we were going into last season. And I was really happy with the style of football as well. And, like, I thought we played well.
And he created that from a really bad place. There's no denying his achievement last season. That is absolutely worthy of nearly the maximum level of praise. I can't take last season away from him. It's just where we are now.
So why do you fire him if he's just had 6 months? Like, what I mean, I know we've not gone anywhere near the Wolves game if we're just talking around it, but I do agree with you. Now, I'm just having this because I find it an interesting conversation. Sure. Hopefully other people do. That I think if he's shown when the team is fit and they're all on form, it works. Now, all of a sudden, we've come into this season. Kulusevski, what's Conte done that could be such a drop-off in Kulusevski? There's been such a drop-off in Son. There's been such a drop-off in Højbjerg, maybe the fitness thing, Dier, the rest of them. There's been a huge drop-off on these individuals. And we're unable to rotate them out. He has to keep playing them. Otherwise, it would have been throwing in a 19-year-old Sarr into like every Premier League game. And I agree with you. He's been forced to do that. He's been forced to play youth because he has no other option now. But what could he have done? Like, how do you mitigate that? Just losing two of your three starting forwards, just dropping off?
The forwards just dropping off, or the forwards dropping off because of tactical changes and because of loss of confidence and because of overwork? You know, I don't think players... Maybe they do, but I struggle to go along with the idea that players just drop off because... I think there has to be a reason for the drop-off, and it's probably normally confidence, but that will be caused by something else. So Son, for example, I said on Twitter the other day, I think Son is one of the absolute best players in the world at running on to the ball and finishing. And we've seen him do that less and less this season and more dropping deep to receive the ball with his back to goal. And I think he is like a mid-Premier League player in that role, like of coming deep and receiving the ball with back. Maybe a lower Premier League player. I think so. He's just not good at that. It's not his skill set. And I don't think he's ever been good at that. And I don't think he's showing any signs of improving despite being asked to do it more and more. So this season, the tweak has been that Kane has played higher up the pitch and he's scored more goals as a result. Son has played deeper and has been pretty awful. And I think his confidence could have been affected by the fact that he's being asked to play a role that he's not comfortable with. He's making mistakes, which is going to make him feel bad. And then when it comes to finishing, like, he hasn't got that same on top of the world streak about him. Maybe. That's just one player. But I agree that Kulusevski's been worse. You go through a team, pretty much every player's been worse than last year. And I don't think that is I don't think you can pin that on the players just being worse. I think like there's a bigger picture thing here going on. And I'm not saying either that a new manager comes in and instantly fixes it. I think like ultimately that will happen. I think there will be a fix if we appoint the right man, but it will take some time to build the confidence back up and build some new principles. And that's why I think Conte should go now, because I think we've got 12 games left in this season, plus Champions League, if we remain in. And, you know, if it's going to be Pochettino, for example, get him in now. Get him used to, like, acclimatise. Get him assessing the squad that we've got. Get him having a look at them and try and rejuvenate some of them in the back end of the season, because in my view, we're just petering out, right? It's the zombie season, as Nathan said. We're just petering out into nothingness. It's just, we feel nothing as fans watching Spurs at the moment. I'm sure the players are feeling very little emotionally. It must be just really difficult to work within right now. And we're going to come away, finish it. We might even finish outside the Europa League places, you know? this is a waste of everyone's time.
I'm not in a desperate rush to make sure that we sack him immediately. I don't think, you know, whoever comes in, again, if you're talking about a long-term coach, I don't think that they're going to have them. They're likely to have an impact that will keep us top four, right? And frankly, I would rather be not in Europe at all than in Europa League.
That's true. Right?
I'd rather
that's
have
true.
Fewer games and more time to train than be in Europa League next season. So that's whatever. In terms of like being proactive, like you said, it's like, there's a report today that it's like it's still up in the air whether Conte is going to be coaching next season. And that's just, you know, what's reported. That's from Romano. But if that's true, that's so stupid. It's like just sort of winging it, seeing what happens. Like it's clearly fallen through. So I don't think that we need to sack Conte before his contract runs out desperately. But we do need to be internally prepared for what we're going to do next, which coaches we're talking to next, what kind of summer that will require. Because if we're just going to kind of see what happens and then begin planning in the summer, we're making the same mistakes we've been making for, you know, ever.
Yeah, that's fair. Before we get stuck into the Wolves game, which we will do, we'll do our usual tactical... Oh, God, I can't even face it, but we will do that. I'm going to hand over to Bardi to discuss our partnership with Athletic Greens.
I started taking AG1 because my health is important to me. But as well as my health, consistency is something I'm obsessed with. Windy, can you name me something which is consistent?
Well, there's your support of anything Italian.
Well, that's true, my best friend, but I notice you fired shots at me rather than talking about Spurs. And that's because they're not consistent. They're not a scoop of AG1 and a shake. They fluctuate, they drop off. They let you down, my friend. But I'll tell you something, AG1 has never let me down like Spurs have. I'm Spurs out and AG1 in my body.
Athletic Greens was created when the founder experienced a ton of gut health issues and ended up on a complicated supplement routine to recover, which cost him $100 a day. It's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself and supports better sleep quality and recovery. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/extrainch. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/extrainch to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So let's do Wolves. Ugh. Lineup. Dyer stepped out of the team, which was interesting given that he won't be playing against Milan either. And Son came back in for Richarlison. And Pedro Porro started. I mean, that was a surprise too, right? Although perhaps not so much given we were playing two games in a week. Bardi, why do you think Dyer was on the bench for this one?
I think perhaps because he won't be playing against Milan, Conte, Stellini, whoever makes the decisions at Spurs, wanted to see what a back three would look like without him in there. Because he's been the one consistent person out of all of them. So I guess they're having a look. I mean, you couldn't have played Longley or Davies on the right because part of me really wants to see Romero in that central role. But I guess that was it to see how the three of them got on. And I think the game probably changed when Diego Costa got injured because I think Jimenez came on and just offered something totally different. He worked his socks off. He ran backwards, put in tackles, linked things up, joined things up nicely and was far more mobile than Diego Costa would ever have been.
Yes,
reasonable point.
I think probably trying out, like giving the back three a bit of practice together ahead of Milan makes some sense. Signing for Richarlison, maybe curious to see who starts against Milan. Feeling is it will be Son and that's not the best choice, but whatever. So Porro, Emerson Royale was had a minor injury for the cup game. And so that all made sense. And then I don't know if he was maybe not 100% or whether it was a tactical decision that Poro was more suited to the Wolves game, Royale's more suited to the Milan game kind of thinking. But yeah, largely looked at that 11 and went, yeah, sure, you know, that's pretty good. And in fact, I thought that this was like actually probably the most technical, technically gifted 11 that we've put out this season. In fact, for a long time. And I think that
although missing Bentancur,
was still, you know, Skip being a minor downgrade from Bentancur, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Longley Dyer thing is interesting because obviously the implication of that is that Davis can't play left wing back, where he's played really well, or at least pretty well. Meaning Perisic did start, and, you know, he is in a terrible run of form right now. He is playing so badly. Like, at the start of the year, I think people were impressed, myself included, with his ability to get a cross in from any position at all, and his set pieces were good. He's not even delivering particularly good set pieces right now. He's just struggling to do anything well. He looks, like you said, Nathan, a decade older. So, yeah, taking Dyer out of the team had that knock-on effect of Perisic being the one to play. So it will be fascinating to see whether they find a solution for that and Davis plays left wing-back versus Milan, or whether Perisic is trusted again. Who knows? I do want to kind of talk about the first half, because Nathan, you defended again earlier that you thought it was a good half from Spurs. I did not think it was a good half from Spurs. I thought, given how passive Wolves were and how relatively easy we found it to build up, I thought we struggled to create good quality chances. We had decent shot volume, which is, you know, an improvement. You know, we're taking some shots. We had a shot after a minute, I think. Pedro Porro was... Kulusevski and Pedro Porro had shots after about a minute. So that was an improvement. But the quality of chance was not good. I felt like we were struggling to get the ball into the box in dangerous areas. And part of that was because Lamina was doing a good job on Kane. Yep. Really useful screening job, which obviously Kane's our main playmaker. So having him removed from proceedings is tricky. And I felt like we didn't capitalise on Wolves being really passive and them being in quite a bad run of form. And I was kind of thinking at halftime, like, this is fine, but we need more, because eventually, you know, they'll do something differently and they'll win. I didn't expect, though, Lopetegui to completely change his system at halftime. And when I say completely change his system, not just the shape, but the style of pressing as well was completely changed. So, Nathan, do you want to talk us through that a little? We had a question from Jenks. Can Nathan explain the tactical adjustment that Lopetegui made at halftime that stopped us from playing? It seemed surprisingly easy for us to play through them in the first half. What could Stellini have done to counteract their changes?
Yeah, so Wolves were 4-2-3-1 in the first half and didn't press that high. Gave us time to build up, and I thought we built up quite nicely. But as you pointed out, failed to turn that into good chances. Lamina was man-marking Kane, as you said, and that probably was significant. But I think you go into a game and you've got Perisic and Porro as the wing backs. You've got Kulusevski, Kane and Son as the front three. You're expecting a goal. If you can serve them well, which I think we did, you're expecting a goal, you know, in 45 minutes. And to be fair, on that point, the half, Costa's injury, and then was it Davies who was down for us? I can't remember.
And then Kilman as well.
And then Kilman was in the second half. So a lot of the first half was lost, and obviously time was added on, but then the momentum has been disrupted. So maybe if you get a true 45, you get something there. But we definitely snatched at our chances. Son especially snatched at his chances. Porro snatched at his chances, which is what you get from him, by the way. But yeah, maybe a little concerning that we failed to turn our first half of actual control and service for a long time into no great chances. Second half, Wolves changed to 3-4-3, and then that enables them to press man-to-man high up the pitch. Cellini actually referenced this. What's the quote? Let me find the quote real quick. I can't, because Twitter is down right now. Cellini said something about how, like, you know, they came out with there was one change, but it took us 5 minutes to work it out. So what we did was we largely just sort of abandoned the idea of slow build up from the back and set possession, instead just race the ball. Every time we turned it over, we looked for a counter attack, and sometimes it was forced. It wasn't hugely fruitful, but it kept us more on the up than Wolves were. And then when we were forced to slow things down, Skip and Højbjerg used sort of creative movement where they would either go well wide and be in a fullback type zone, so you have like a back four, or they would double up on one side, or they would go hang out with the attacking midfielders and stuff like that to sort of open up more interesting angles that way. So that was kind of working okay for a bit. At that point, Wolves had made three subs. We get to the 66th minute, and they use their fourth and fifth sub. So they've now got five fresh legs on the pitch. Obviously, Jimenez has been playing since the 30-something minutes.
And we have yet to make a single sub by this point. I think it's important to say.
So you've got this game that is sort of quite transitional, lots of back and forth, lots of fast breaks, and Wolves are much fresher. So they begin to come on top because they simply have the fitness advantage, right? Talked a lot about fitness advantage, but definitely super clear on this situation in which we pushed hard in the first half, and then we're playing, you know, schoolyard constant counter-attack football, and Wolves are fitter. We don't make a sub until the 77th minute. That sub is Lucas Moura, and it is like for like in that he comes from Kulusevski. And if anything, Wolves get better. The next sub we make after that is Emerson Royale, who comes from Poro, which on paper at least is a defensive substitution when we obviously need to be pushing for a goal. And additionally, the reason Emerson Royale has been playing better recently is because of the relationship he's developed with Kulusevski, where he tucks in narrow, but now he's playing with Lucas Moura, who doesn't have that relationship with him and doesn't play wide on the touchline, even though that would probably be to his advantage. And so you get to the goal, Wolves sort of work it through midfield, Højbjerg and Skip are very easily turned. You get Jimenez's shot. Forster, who's been okay, spills it back out into the middle. Again, Skip and Højbjerg are dead on their legs. Adama Traore gets there first, probably tries to control it. Instead, he accidentally chips it beautifully, perfectly over Forster. And we go one down. So the next sub after that is Richarlison. We change to a 4-4-2. But it's the game's over by that point. Wolves get the ball in the corner and basically keep it there for the rest of the game. So you can say that we were a little unlucky in the first half. You can criticise our wastefulness instead. But definitely really poor game management, in my opinion. To bring on Lucas Moura for Kulusevski, the argument for would be that you have a transitional game with lots of 1v1s, lots of athleticism being relevant, and therefore Lucas Moura is the most suited for that type of situation. He's also the least good player between, you know, him, Richarlison, Dan Juma, Brian Hill, who we loaned out, and he's set to leave on a free. It's so frustrating.
It didn't make any sense. It's like we brought on a BTEC Adama Traore, basically. And that's the frustrating thing about it. And we were talking about what Conte can bring if he comes back to the dugout. I do think perhaps if he's there in person, he sees this a bit better. But then I don't know who's making the decision to bring on Lucas. So then that's a damning indictment. If it's him who's managing from distance, then that's a problem. I think him being there in person, he might be able to adjust things quicker. But I don't know who made the decision to put Lucas on.
The entire season he's been here, he's not done that. There was some statistical analysis on Reddit from a user, Jocular Mango, who analysed our sub use versus the rest of the league. So we're actually pretty good in terms of the number of subs, pretty active, I mean, in terms of the number of subs that we get on, but we get them on very late in the game. So in terms of the minutes that subs are playing, we are, where did he put us? We're significantly below league average in terms of the number of minutes that subs are playing, and that's before we even get into general rotation from match to match.
Yeah, we were under Conte, we were supposed to have five subs and change after 60 minutes.
That's what he did at Inter.
Yeah.
And now he doesn't trust his squad, even though he's...
You think it's just a lack of trust?
Well, what else explains the fact that he made those substitutions on the clock, regularly, super active, one of the highest subbing coaches in Serie A, to then hardly do it here? I guess it's because we're in the lead less, right? Was the other factor.
Yeah. I think it's more likely that because... So, for example, I think a really good opportunity for him at the start of the season was to change the wing-backs regularly. And he did trust Sessegnon and Matt Doherty because he started them both regularly. In fact, they were often the favourites. So that I don't think the argument stacks up when it comes to the wing-backs. I think it does stack up when it comes to the central midfielders. Like, it took a while for him to trust Bissouma. I don't think he did trust Skip until he had to play him, and likewise with Sarr.
No, I think he trusted Skip. He started Skip all the time over Lo Celso and Ndombele when he was first here.
Oh, in the first season he did, didn't he? Because people were complaining about our workmanlike midfield, and then Skip got injured, and maybe he didn't think that Skip was fully fit yet.
I'm people.
But I think the interesting thing is, like, it's not like he's forgotten that we can make substitutes. He's just forgotten that part of the game. It's interesting. I think he doesn't trust the squad. And I think this lack of trust is now starting to turn against him. And these players are rebelling, maybe, or just losing interest.
Yeah, losing interest. That I kind of feel that way myself, right? Mm. So,
but this is like the third time that these players have lost interest, though. So,
Anything more we want to say on Wolves? Not really. I mean, I was really impressed with Lopetegui's game management,
sure,
to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't know a great deal about him. I'm not going to pretend that I do. Like, my time is so restricted these days that I am largely restricted to the Premier League and Championship in the football I watch. I really, really was impressed by how he managed that game, the tactical change at halftime, the subs that he used. Like Bardi said, Jimenez coming on did definitely have an impact as well, and that was kind of forced upon him. But yeah, really, really impressed.
So obviously he's doing a very different job now at Wolves than he's been doing for most of his career, because of the reality of Wolves and where they're at in the table and how much the ball they have. But traditionally through his career, he's been a high possession coach, very structured possession, really nice build-up play, and then it gets to the final third and they become a very cross-reliant side. It's kind of a bit odd, but I definitely think he's good.
Jose Sarr continues to impress me.
Like him. Had a good game.
He's really good. Yeah, he's decent. Pedro Porro set piece off the crossbar.
Yes.
Yeah, but then why didn't he take the second one, Wendy? Tell me that.
Weird, wasn't it?
So, yeah, Porro's just hit the crossbar. We get a free kick a few minutes later. The second free kick is much more central and therefore lends itself less to the curved technique that Porro used from the previous free kick. And instead opens up the possibility to take a... to take sort of a powerful low shot using a fake wall. And I said that Harry Kane would score free kicks this season using that technique.
I didn't want to bring that up. I thought about it, but I wasn't going to bring it up.
No, it's only fair because I've done that to you on this pod. So yeah, it's not materialized, has it, lads?
It was never going to happen, Nathan. It was never going to happen.
Our wall moves out the way and he hits the other one again and again.
Yeah. He is a bad free kick taker and needs to never take free kicks. Yeah.
He must bury all of them in training.
Because, I bet he does.
But not to like have a mutiny on his hands. He must bury all of them.
I bet he does. I feel pretty confident that he must do.
Yeah, I was encouraged with Pedro Porro's free kick. It would be nice to have someone who could take a good direct free kick on a regular basis.
How about his general performance in this game?
This game and his previous game, I am encouraged.
Okay.
I would say. I definitely feel like he is starting to get the rhythm of the Premier League, and that's happened quite quickly. Obviously, there are some defensive weaknesses there.
We knew
that was the case. He's not been bought as a defender. He's not Emerson Royale. But he's way more dynamic in the final third than Emerson Royale. He's way more dynamic in build-up than Emerson Royale, in my opinion. And I think he'll long-term be a really, really good signing for the club. I like him a lot.
I agree. I think there's some really nice touches from him. I think he shows really nice movement in the final third. I think he's got a decent cross on him. I like him. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's one positive, is that hopefully, like, we'll get to see a fair bit of him over the rest of the season, and he can acclimatise really for next season and hopefully start strongly. Because, he is a potentially really, really good player. Do we want to talk about Sheffield United? I guess we ought to.
It was really bad.
Miserable. Absolutely miserable. Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, so the starting 11 didn't fill me with joy. Lucas starting, Richarlison starting through the middle, which actually, I was probably quite pleased about that. Kane got a break. Davinson Sanchez playing. I never enjoy watching Davinson Sanchez play anymore. I'm sorry, I just don't. What's to say about this game? It was so stodgy so stodgy. We really struggled to create anything. Against the second string Sheffield United team, by the way, this wasn't Sheffield United's first team. They've heavily rotated themselves.
Great.
There should have been more than enough in our team to beat them, but we just, I mean, we looked how we've often looked this season, just don't have ideas, don't know ways to break teams down.
Yeah. I think if we were expecting to sit really deep and then our game was just for Porro and Perisic to cross the ball in all game, with Richarlison and Lucas and Son as targets, then like maybe we get there eventually. But they came out and got in our faces, one meant that you got Davinson Sanchez under pressure. If you want to talk about failure to back Conte, then the fact that we're still seeing Davinson Sanchez play for us, I think, is the best example. But then apparently also he really likes Davinson Sanchez and is keen on having him in the squad. So I don't know, man, what the fuck.
I mean, he's not going to just go on a podcast and say Davinson Sanchez is a donkey and just bin him out. If he's in the squad, he's going to say, he's going to say nice things about him. He's not going to go full Jose Mourinho and just say bad
things. This is the internal reporting that he likes Davinson Sanchez. Yeah.
Who's your source?
I know.
Ali Gold. Yeah. Another club mouthpiece, according to some on Twitter.
Fine. All right. Fine. Maybe he doesn't like Davinson Sanchez. We failed there. We failed to bring in a superior backup.
Yeah. And like, Tanganga was fine in his last appearance, right? And was on the bench in this one.
Against Leicester? I don't think
so. One before that.
Which was that?
2019.
when we got lost, when we lost to Colchester. I think there's something with this club, and it happens consistently in the Cups, that they just turn up for these matches and the arse falls out of them. I have no idea what it is. I have no idea what it is, because it's repeated across managers, across timelines, across generations, that we get to these cup games where there's a real opportunity to win something and they just fall apart. And it was almost like you were watching the game. And I tweeted it at the time, because the only thing I've seen more than Tottenham is like my own naked body. So I know what Tottenham look like inside out. I've seen this club. And I swear to you, on 60 minutes, I looked at them and I went, they've lost it. It's gone. They're now concerned. They're concerned. They're now scared. And they're now worried they're going to lose this game. And that fear just crept across them. And it was compounded when they brought Harry Kane on. Because then they brought Harry Kane on and they go, oh, holy fuck, we really might lose this. And putting Harry Kane on was the correct decision. But he should have started. But he came on and they went, now we're really in trouble. They're bringing Kane on. And it was just waiting for Sheffield United to score. And to credit to Sheffield United, it was a better goal than I expected.
It was a good goal.
I thought it'd be like a bundled Middlesbrough goal. But I swear to you, you can see it in Tottenham in cup games. And I hope we don't see it against Milan. Maybe we won't, because it's the Champions League and it's a bit different. But with Tottenham, you can just watch them. And there's that moment where they go, yeah. We're shitting ourselves.
I think we all felt that, to be honest. Just tactically quickly, I think so Sheffield came out and they pressed much more aggressively than perhaps we were expecting. Maybe we should have done better homework there, if that's the case. And then what that meant was that we managed to get the ball to our front three, but our front three comprised of Son, Richarlison and Lucas, who all have a tendency to dribble with their head down and not know where each other are. And so they I don't think they found each other all game. Basically.
And to be fair, Lucas was probably the most impressive of the three. But honestly, it's much of a muchness. Like, Lucas did every Lucas thing going, which is he beats a man and looks really impressive in doing so and then does nothing. He loses the ball, or he dribbles into an area where he can't do any damage, or like he's just shuttled out of harm's way. It was the most Lucas performance ever. And people are like,
full on greatest hits.
Yeah, people are like, why are you picking on Lucas? Like, you know, he tried hard in that game. You know, he's one of the better ones. I'm like, he did exactly what Lucas always does, which is nearly always shit. And there's nothing to celebrate about that. Like, fine, he tried hard. I'm sick of seeing Lucas Moura try hard for Tottenham. Like, I'm so happy that he's leaving at the end of the season. Also, he's a transphobic piece of shit. I don't want him playing for my club.
He needs to fuck off. And Sanchez needs to fuck off. And Longley needs to fuck off. And there's a few of them. Perisic, I know, I was all for Perisic because I quite liked the style of him. But he's been a disaster. So there's a few of them that just need to fuck off.
Body can run for 90 minutes if we need someone to just...
I could do that.
do you know what? Perisic has been a disaster, hasn't he?
And he's got another year on his contract.
I'm really surprised by how much of a disaster he's been. Because I thought, like, I thought he might not play as much as he has, yep. but I thought he'd really contribute well. I thought yep. he'd be a really useful squad player who would, you know, in big games, he'd come up with big moments.
Mm. Yeah.
He's got a lot of assists, but let's say that's all down to mainly
corners,
set pieces, yep. right?
He's not been a squad player. He's had to be a starter, because Sessegnon, I was hoping for nice things from Sessegnon, and I thought the season started quite nicely for him, but that fell apart. And now we're forced into a point where it's Perisic starts or Ben Davies, and that's a problem.
But Ben Davies, who hasn't played left wing back for a long time, is making Perisic look even worse. Yes.
Yeah.
He's so bad. I'm really disappointed and sad at how bad he's been. I was just really hoping that there'll be something there.
But we knew exactly the upside and the downside when we bought Perisic. We knew his ability, his skill, his strengths, especially with his crossing. But we also know we know the risk of buying a 33-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's fair. You just have to accept that when you do that, that's the risk that you have. And especially if you buy a 33-year-old, maybe you're thinking, hey, he'll be a squad player. He's going to come on for Sessegnon at 60 minutes. When we're pushing for a game, he's a really good crosser. We're seeing the game out. He's a veteran. He can rotate in for cup games, but if you're asking him to come in and play 100 games in a season and run up and down and be on the back foot all the time, then you're going to exhaust him because he's an old man in footballing terms.
Yeah.
But before we finish, do you know what? We're going to fucking smash Milan. We're going to absolutely take Milan apart, because that's life, man.
I am less convinced. I really hope that is the case. You're going, right, buddy?
Yeah, we're going to smash
them. I hope you have a wonderful time.
They're having a misery.
Two bad teams, man. Two really bad teams.
Two bad teams, exactly.
Fucking shitens.
I want to end on a quick bit of next manager chat. We had a question from Papa Blankson, who said, question for the pod. It looked at Ange Ball in the Celtic versus Madrid game, and my only problem is he plays a high line with marauding fullbacks, and I feel like we don't have the centre-backs or the DMs to cover the ground for that, and our pressing is terrible, but otherwise he looks good as a top three candidate. Nathan, you like Ange Postecoglou?
Yeah. Yeah, so he's a top three candidate for me, and I also agree with the question mark. So in the Scottish Premier League, he has a talent dominance, yeah?
Yeah.
And so his defensive organisation doesn't really get tested. Celtic are able to counter-press pretty comfortably and then return to playing his good possession football, right? Very confident in the possessional structure. I think there's some really nice stuff going on there. The question mark would be like, how well does that scale when you bring it into a top five league? Not so much the possession stuff. Fairly optimistic there. It's how's his defensive game? What happens when his team are on the back foot? And that's what we saw against Real Madrid. I thought they impressed for a while and then fell apart. So I want to go and have a look at that more in depth. Also in the top three are Mauricio Pochettino, who you don't need an introduction to, but he, for me, would have to pledge his willingness to accept a director of football top-down model, because I think that's where things largely went wrong for us before. And then to finish off the top three is Roberto De Zerbi, who has only joined Brighton this season. It'll be hard to get, but I really, really like him. Buddy is shaking his head.
No more Italians, please.
I would rather... putting a hard line under ex-Chelsea managers, and then we'll work towards no more Italians after that. So that rules out, you know, Potter, who's actually still in the job, Tuchel, and a whole bunch of other dickheads as well. So also Hansi Flick with Germany. Currently Fonseca is in France and hates Paratici, and Paratici hates him. Beal, whose Rangers I haven't actually watched and people are much more dubious about, but I think there are really good signs with regards to him and what he did as assistant, especially under Gerrard. Slot in the Eredivisie. Obviously, anytime you're hiring a coach from the Eredivisie, there's risk, but I'm quite impressed with the football that his teams are playing and the talent that he brings through, both where he is now and also before at RZ. Michael Carrick is fairly early to coaching still, but is doing really good stuff with Middlesbrough. And obviously, he is former Spurs, which is why I've got him ahead of Company, who doing great stuff with Burnley, probably likely to end up at City after Pep.
Incredible recruitment at Burnley as well. Such a good player recruitment.
Pirlo, who I think actually did a good job with Juventus, but got sacked. He's now mid-table in Turkey, but he's doing all right there after a rocky start, apparently. Again, also Xavi Alonso doing good stuff, but it's early days.
Steve Cooper.
So Cooper, we've been linked to, who, I don't know, he did good work in the championship, but like not impressed by the football at all. Anywhere he's been. So I want to talk about...
He did well for England and had them playing well.
Great.
I mean, you're going to sack Antonio Conte and hire Steve Cooper. I mean,
come on. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be regressive.
So Marcelo Gallardo, people are really excited by. I think the opposite of Postecoglou, right? Impressive defensive work. Counter-pressing game seems really, really good. But in terms of what his teams do in possession, they largely just sort of have the better players. And I've got concerns about that translating. So I'd like to see him at a different European club and then keep an eye on him there. And then similar situation for Oliver Glasner, Iraola, Will Steele, probably some others as well, who like good up-and-coming coaches but aren't possession-focused and therefore they're a big risk that I don't want to gamble on.
Who's the chap at Porto? Conte Sal? Isn't he good?
Porto. So Amorim, actually, sorry, at Sporting is another example of a good up-and-coming coach who is more of an out-of-possession than an in-possession guy, but Porto I can't tell you too much about.
So Tottenham Hotspur have once again got us searching for optimism by discussing our next manager, which is just absolutely typical, isn't it? Anyway, boys, it's been a pleasure.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Barney, and our tactics guy, Nathan Aklar. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/TheExtraInch. Production is by Nathan A. Clark. Our logo, artwork and website are designed by Creighton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram at David Lindmer. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. And most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the ex-subs. We love every single last one of you. And of course, come on you Spurs.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.